This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Joy 949.
You're with Dean Beck.
People are still having sex. It's been going on for quite a while.
On Hide and Seek.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9, and the apprentice is not with us this evening, which means we can talk about a few curly subjects like this one. Very few opportunities arise where we can have an open and honest discussion with someone about their drug taking. Tonight, we are going to do just that. He will remain nameless, and his voice has been changed, so he cannot be identified. But it is my great pleasure to welcome our special guest this evening, Mr. X. Welcome.
G'day.
How did you start out getting into drug use, and when did it go from being something that was, I guess, a fun part of life to something that was taking over your life?
Well, that actually spanned over sort of an 11-year period in real terms, but it started like just as a, probably from about 22, you know, the usual pills out and that sort of stuff, and a bit of speed and likes. And then there was one particular event that I guess was pivotal, where I grew up in Adelaide. And I went out after chasing this bloke for quite a long time. We found ourselves in a hotel in the Adelaide Hills. And that was the first time that I was exposed to injected drugs. And that was meth, was the first time.
Had you had crystal in other forms other than injecting it before?
Yeah, smoked it. And also didn't mind snorting it, actually. It was sort of the way. But I guess it hadn't been that association with sex. Like, it was out, you'd do it as part of a going out process, where this was...
So it was out on the dance floor, sort of, thing, not in the bedroom, right?
Exactly. So it was, we used to say that, pill and powder went together like peas and carrots. And so we'd have our entree dinner out, and then you know, obviously if you picked up, all the better. But I guess the two were quite exclusive from each other. One led to the other often, but this was very different. This was about, it was put to me in such a way that this would actually be for sex. And I'd never thought of it like that. Wow, wasn't he right?
So what went through your head when you were posed with that question the first time around?
Well, I think of the environment. A guy I'd been chasing for a couple of months, we started getting really well. He was hot as fuck. And so I was really into him. And he had this little wicked look in his eye and suggested we try something different. And put it in such a way that it would be the best fuck of my life. And I mean, that's a pretty big challenge to put out. And just that look in his eye was kind of hot. So I was a little bit sort of edgy about it, but that made me for a fleeting second. And then this kind of raw, fuck it, yeah, let's do this, it came over me. And he wasn't wrong.
So describe that first experience for us.
Look, so I imagine you're on a bed in a hotel where we're naked. He was fiddling around with getting things ready for about 10 minutes. And I kind of had this sort of palpitation almost... sense of excitement, but sort of a bit of an unknown. And then the other part of me, a little bit of the head, was talking, saying, you shouldn't do this, you know, and I shut that voice up pretty quickly. And then, the actual putting in the needle component of it, I won't lie to you, it was fucking erotic. It was hot. I would never have thought it. And the experience for that next 2 minutes was just this extraordinary level of intensity that I'd not thought humanly possible.
We should emphasise that by no means are we advocating the use of drugs or injecting drug use, but it is important for us to have clear, open and honest discussions around this subject because, frankly, nobody else does. Mr. X, that experience in itself is not enough for someone to become addicted to something, though.
Look... No, and there's a little bit of yes in that too. So, in that experience changed something in me, that it was a new barometer, new level, if you like, and one that for whatever reason my brain kept revisiting.
A new baseline.
Yeah, and but one that, you know, your brain always thinks of different things. But this thing just kept popping back in my head. And I can't describe it other than that, but it was almost like the something was seeking it out. So I've never been a smoker. I've never had, drink and eat too much, but it's never been that sort of craving kind of thing. And this just would appear at the strangest of times. I could be at work and...
And is it like a twinge?
What yeah, and actually the feeling of the heart would move and I'd touch my vein. It was something that... And at the time, I probably wasn't conscious of all of this.
But it was certainly physical?
Absolutely. Right. In fact, it was as much... I could even rethink about it, and my heart would race faster, and so it was partly involuntary and partly really good. And for a period, look, I probably only shot up five times in that area, but and sort of preempting that this isn't a glorifying thing, something changed in me, not necessarily for the better as a result of that.
So going from that first occasion to then doing it, I guess, a second time and then a third time and then a fourth time, tell us about that process. How did it unfold?
Look, it was so good, I was also a little bit daunted, so... I guess the next day I'm sitting there thinking that was fantastic. A week later, I went through a bit of a process of really thinking, wow, this is that was good, but what does it mean? And so I sort of stayed away for a while and did it. But we stayed together with Seb for a couple of years or just under. And so every so often we did it.
As fuck buddies or as partners? Or
bit of both. So right? It was kind of a...
It was something you shared together.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he did a lot more than I did. But it was only ever with him, and there was a bit of trust. And then about the fourth or fifth time, a couple of others joined in, and that was my first insight into what would then be called the party and play movement in a broader sense.
Let's talk about that. When others were involved, how did that unfold? Because I imagine it would be something that some people would instantly run away from at a million miles, and it would also be like a magnet to others.
Yeah. So Seb was probably the facilitator of that. So these were pre-confirmed people, if you like. So it was
a known thing,
preordained almost. Yep. Yeah. So and so there was none of that awkward kind of questioning, which has happened since. So anyway, I ended up moving from Adelaide to here, and so I kind of just got a bit distant for a little while, and I thought about it a little bit, and then as every year ticked by over here, I kind of started to forget about that life, and by moving here, I didn't know anyone in that scene, and you knew it was around, but it wasn't something I was closely connected to, and it was also bloody expensive here comparatively as well,
right?
Which meant that it just sort of didn't fit, and. If you're going to blow that sort of money, we were sort of going to nice restaurants and enjoying, the Friday night degustations.
But it did get out of hand.
Absolutely. So
how?
Look, it sort of fast forward about 7 years, give or take, and I ended up having to work up in Sydney. And I was with a good job, and they paid for me to move up there. And right in the guts of Darlinghurst or in that space, Surry Hills. And I was in the thick of it, and I guess... A mate that was living with me, well, actually, funny enough, a mate from Adelaide, was staying at the house I was working from or living in. And anyway, one day, about 6 or 8 weeks in, he had a sharps bin, which he was just looking dust in his bedroom. And anyway, I just spied it. And I've got to tell you, it was this experience was visceral. I couldn't hear him anymore. My ears started to ring. All I could think of, which was one of the symptoms or it can happen if you blast, is you can get a ringing in your ear. So all these physical symptoms just came rushing back. And literally imagine him being turned off.
So the sight of the sharps bin, the yellow container, was a trigger.
Bear in mind, after 6 weeks in Sydney, there was a lot of exposure to it. Not to say that Sydney's the axis of evil, but if you're in the guts of Darlinghurst and you want to find yourself some trouble, it's...
It's not far away.
And I had a funny feeling that my mate was playing up a little bit, and we've never spoken about that topic, and so it was sort of around. So don't imagine it as just a single one thing, but that definitely was a major sort of whack. And I just basically said to him, "Can you get meth?" It turns out in Sydney there's even fucking vending machines for needles. Which perversely gave me a giggle. Literally less than an hour, I had a gram of meth, and we had our place was a fuck festival for 3 days. And that kind of set me off on a slightly different path.
We're speaking with Mr. X, who's revealing his experience taking crystal meth and injecting drug use. You mentioned just then you went off on a different path. You had a good career, you had a stable job, and you were financially secure. That started to take a nosedive.
Yeah, completely. So you imagine you're in the hundreds of thousands in the black to being, by the end of it, after a certain legal action taken against me and everything, $500,000 in debt.
And that's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. Some of that was as a result of being sued for some mistakes, and part of that was just blowing all of my money.
Those mistakes were professional mistakes, I gather, but do you put that down to your lack of judgment by being addicted to crystal?
I signed certain documents that made me personally liable for some things that...
If you'd had a clear head, you don't think you would have done
it? No fucking way in the world.
Right.
When you're in that state, legal lines can become a little blurry as well. What is right and wrong? What is, you know, what does the law actually mean? What is this? And so suddenly I guess I'm not going to say with certainty, but certainly I crossed some lines with that people weren't appreciative of. And some of them took retribution pretty tightly.
Some of that expenditure, though, or that loss of funds, was also due to, I guess, an ever-increasing demand for the drug.
$100,000.
$100,000.
At least. That's just the drug habit in that 1 year, at least, if not more. I sort of, in preparing for today, I tried to think about it, and I spoke to a friend who was close at that time, and he estimates it more at $200,000. And but you're talking every day.
Injecting every day?
Look, except when I couldn't find my veins. So they got to a point where, and I still got scars from, where basically taken to it, may as well take with a pickaxe. Trying to drink Gatorade just to get your veins up kind of stuff. You know, it was a really sad, this addiction had got hold in a manner that I can't explain. Like, it got to, I would turn up to a mate's place who was a good mate, but he would have a shot ready for me. Just because it was hot, and he'd come in and he'd shove it in my arm as soon as I walked in the door, and we'd fuck. And that then meant that you were doing all sorts of risky behaviours, because then I did that with other people who I didn't trust. So, you know, you left it to the hands of the gods. By that point, it was just reckless, destructive behaviour. It wasn't about enhancing, it was about destroying.
It's a line that I often have heard and read about that is crossed, where one minute you're in control and then you're... the next minute the drug's in control, and you never really know when that happens.
If I was to project, this downfall took about 12 months, I guess, in real time. Certainly by 12 months from the first day of the vending machine in Sydney, the honeymoon was was well over, and all that was behind was a train wreck. And but say about the first 3 months, I was still functioning and everything was going all right at work, and it was done, and then the sick day started, and then it was, fuck, it's Monday night, I haven't, you know. So then at 3 o'clock, when you had your day in bed, you then get on Grindr, and next thing you know, it lights up, and you know the usual suspects, and then of course came the wonderful world of the packet, fucking hot guys that give up their body as long as you know, I had to do two things. I had to stay hard, if I could guarantee that. Sometimes I'd get drugs given to me, and alternatively, as long as you brought them over a treat, then you could get some fucking oddies for a point or two. And so then that's when the credit card money, and you know, so you know, no longer just paying for your habit, you're then feeding a monster, part driven by ego and getting possibly boys outside your grade. And and in return, if you gave them money, that'd be you know, prostitution. But if you're giving them treats, well, you're just being nice, aren't you? And you know, while there was some interesting and fun experiences in that, it was as addictive as well as the other.
From what I can gather, though, the two are pretty much in synergy with each other. The sex and the crystal are hard to separate.
There's no nice way to say it. I am better at sex on crystal, so I've got to make some choices. I either, you know, I've even gone after, when I was going through the process following stopping, I went even to see yoga people, I went and saw fucking Buddhist type people, saying, you know, hey, what controls, what are the physical things, what meditation can you do to learn some other tricks, what part of your brain can you get in touch to do it? And one of them laughed and said, no, you've tapped into that one, you know, you that's the only way you get to that is through powerful drugs like meth, and you've got to make a decision whether or not it is worth the extra performance for that. And then he said, I'm not your mum, you've got to work that one out all by yourself. And so, you know, and then even things like you come a lot quicker, you know, so suddenly, you know, you can't commit to a long session, you know, because it's not necessarily something you can physically do. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes with that that's kind of hard.
Our guest is Mr. X. He is being very forthcoming in his injecting drug use and how crystal meth changed his life. This is Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9.
And on that note, let's get back to the program.
You're listening to Hide and Seek. You are with Dean Beck and my special guest, who we are calling Mr. X. He's revealing his life addicted to crystal meth and injecting drug use and how it changed his life. As I said earlier, this is not something that in any way we advocate, but I personally believe it's something that we need to talk about and talk a lot more about because it is well and truly prevalent amongst gay men in this town and throughout this country. Mr. X, we hear about the term, you know, functional drug user. We think that drug addicts are, you know, gutter crawlers, etc., etc. You were a white-collar worker.
White-collar, highly educated, you know, very master's degree, you know, all the stuff that you know. And in fact, going through some of the things that I had to, because I got quite ill as a result of my decisions, was that apparently it's a big chunk of that market, particularly in the meth crowd, are people that actually do think a lot and are introspective a bit, that sometimes either turns the brain on into a way that's quite empowering or alternatively focuses it more in other areas, and so in other ways turns the brain off. So that relationship.
So that's the escapism element.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So sometimes it makes your brain even perform what you think is better. And if you don't mind a bit of intellect, that kind of is good. And if it also turns you into a wild animal where normally you'd just be a bit bookish, well, that's available too. And certainly that part of it for me, it did bring out a little skank in me that I kind of liked.
You know? That otherwise wouldn't have been.
But look, it's there now that I guess. But it wouldn't have been found, I don't think, if it wasn't for that.
How did you get to a point where you knew that things had to change?
Look, that's a real simple one. It was when I got sent to the nut house because I was stuck in a physical, my brain actually stopped working to a point that I was stuck on the edge of my bed in a statue-like catatonic state.
When you say a nut house, what do you mean?
I got taken to St. Vincent's to Caritas there for 2 nights.
The psychiatric ward.
Yeah, that's correct. Because my brain had actually failed.
And what did that look like?
I didn't wipe my ass to go to the toilet anymore. My place looked like a crime scene as far as magic boxes, plates, the usual stuff. Just imagine all those basic functional things. So the science term for it, the doctor's term, was disorganized schizophrenia with the symptoms that I was demonstrating. But it had come back not from, I mean, there was, I think, some history of my brain was predisposed to getting some things go wrong anyway. I dared it into doing it properly.
And from what we gather from people who do have schizophrenic outbursts, whether that be through marijuana or crystal or other things, it is even more prevalent if there is a predisposition. Yeah.
So certainly we've got a couple of like uncles and aunts who are sort of in the family with it, and some other ones close to which I won't go into, but there was a risk of it. And so I was very lucky though because St. Vincent's, where it is in the guts of it, they
know what they're doing.
Fucking oath. If it wasn't for them, I'd be in a bit of trouble.
From that time in the hospital, what then happened to you to, I guess, over a period of time, gradually rebuild your life? And what failures, because I'm sure there were some, along the way?
And should mention with that, I got fired along the way, by the way, so sort of...
You lost your job.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that was after being in the company for 7 years, and of which I had a shareholding in as well, so there was... That firing was hard on everybody as well. So with relation to what went wrong, I couldn't even really construct a sentence anymore properly in the same way. I had to learn to even do basic things like learning to write some sentences again, and on top of that, I had to actually do some lot of rewiring of the brain. So there's a lot of the rehabilitation, which included antipsychotic medication. It also included a little bit of counselling, but the issue wasn't the drug use wasn't from me being depressed or anything like that. I was an addict, good old fashioned. So the addiction medicine was very good, as far as there was a lot of stuff around how to manage the addict in me, and that included transitioning through. They had to put me on Ritalin for a while to wean me off my addiction as well, which, so that was about 6 months as well. I managed to find a way to snort that, which was pretty clever too. So just to show that I was, despite everything, despite fucking literally losing the lot, and by this stage now, Salvos are helping to pay my rent and my place and giving me some food vouchers and even a couple of times doing shopping for me. And that was after being, in a very senior role in a professional services area. So it was pretty fascinating strolling into the Maroubra Salvos, I can assure you.
It's a hell of a fall from grace.
I was never graceful. It was, I guess, a very indulgent hedonistic period to start with, and then something went between hedonistic to just reckless and dumb.
Looking back, what would you like to tell yourself?
That
element of you.
Certainly, I would have liked to have understood that sexualized environment way back in Adelaide that day, what that could have done. Right. So, for example, I've had an opportunity now to introduce someone to injecting drugs and refused point blank. Right. And I'm not to say it's your mother, but that one, I had no clue of what I had actually signed up for on that day. There's a range of things. It was such a hot, sexy environment.
Do you blame that person?
No, not at all. Absolutely not at all. I don't think he knew. But knowing what I do now, I would, before anyone was to go enter into that world of injecting, that environment in which they do it in, I understand is quite pivotal, particularly in the early days. So, if it's a particularly hot, fun, connected environment, that may in fact make an association, as it does with me, to that time. And that was a very powerful one. So, I've had some good times, but I've also, I don't function well as a injecting drug user. I have had drugs, since I've got out of all that. When I do it, I now only do it for a night, and there's very strict rules.
You set parameters around it for yourself, or?
And anyone that I buy from, right? So I'm absolutely.
You word them up, do you?
So you must fucking not.
Okay.
So
that's respected.
We're talking sort of five or six times a year kind of stuff now. Sure. Absolutely. So,
What would you like to tell anyone listening that is considering or has done it, and perhaps may not be as far down the path as you, but may have tried it a couple of times? What would you like to say to them?
If there are other ways to get an association with that, chase it. The injecting for me is such a powerful one that it's a bit of a beast that I struggle to manage. Right, so
still.
Hence why I've got to put rules around other people doing it. So it's and that's basically really saying, look, I am a junkie, but I'm at least aware enough to know that as a junkie, these are the rules we're going to have. So if you're doing it to hurt yourself, why do it? If you're doing it for fun and you're living, and that's it. But the capacity for it to become an act of harm as opposed to an act of sexual pleasure or intensity is one to keep a real close eye on.
Do you have any lasting health implications from your drug use?
Look, so we're talking now, I'm only just back to sort of full-time work, and that's not every week. So there's times where I will fall over for a week where I'm just flat. And the brain gets exhausted from doing it.
And that takes the shape of sort of like a mild depression, or
it's actually just sleep for me.
Time out.
Just basically poof. So for me, it's a lot of lost opportunity. But at the same time, it is what it is. It's also framed me in a whole bunch of other ways that I'm actually really delighted by. I'm very comfortable with how I've handled my addiction management. I'm very comfortable with the fact that I've taken ownership of my own responsibilities for that, and that I actually like my life a whole lot better than some of the times beforehand. So
I imagine along the way you've upset a number of people.
He's stealing from one of my best mates, was probably the highlight, and yeah. really clever.
He might have been one of them that's upset.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah. Well, I thought I was being really fucking clever, and I was that off my guts that it was the most clumsy, stupid thing to do. And so it was very good of him. But look, bar one person who we were in the thick of it, and it was never going to work because of the connection with the dealing component. But most people are pretty good, you know. If you fuck them over and you apologise and you move on, most of them.
Mr. X, I want to thank you so much for your honesty and for sharing your story, and I hope that it goes some way to enlightening our listening audience this evening. Thank you very much. You are with Dean Beck on Hide and Seek.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.